Welcome to a Bowden Education podcast. In this podcast, we will be discussing work-life balance with Catherine Carden. Catherine Carden is a co-founder of Bowden Education and has considerable experience of teaching in a range of settings and leadership. She has a particular interest in the notion of work-life balance. So, welcome, Catherine.
Welcome, thank you.
I wanted to start off with a couple of questions to help set the context. So firstly, why in your opinion is the teaching profession in the midst of a crisis?
Well, there are in my mind two clear issues that the teaching profession is currently facing. So if we take each in turn, and I think firstly, we have an issue, and it's been a fairly long-standing issue, about recruitment into teaching. And that's been a real growing concern over a number of years now, sadly. It's seemingly that teaching is not the profession of choice for many. And so because of that, the numbers of teachers coming in are declining, number of applications to teacher education are declining. And as we moved out of previous recession, there are impacts of that. So strangely, teaching does well in a recession because people can't get other jobs, particularly around certain subject areas, maybe the likes of science and maths and so on. But then as we move out as a country out of recession, people get secure jobs, and actually there's a knock-on effect to those applying to teaching. So that's been an issue over recent years. And yet there are statements and claims to say that more NQTs are entering the profession than ever before. Yet it seems that providers are facing recruitment challenges. So there's a bit of a mismatch between sort of DfE headlines on this and anecdotal reporting from teacher education providers. And actually, according to the there's a 2018 workforce census, and the number of secondary school teachers is actually down in number by just 0.3%, but since 2017, and primary teachers in the same period are down 0.5%. So actually, there are more teachers, or there are not significantly less teachers in the profession. However, there is an increase in the number of children in the system, and that's growing. So then you end up with this bigger gap. The second issue that's facing teaching right now is the retention of teachers. So we can't recruit them, and then seemingly we're struggling to retain them. And then firstly, the number of teachers making it to full retirement age is more than halved, and many are opting out prior to their full retirement age and taking early retirement. And we also have an issue at the other end of the scale with our NQTs, so new teachers coming into the profession. So again, the workforce census 2018 said that from those newly qualified teachers entering in 2017-18, just over 15% are not in service after a year. And perhaps a 15% attrition rate might be expected when you're in the first year of something. People go into a career and realise it's not for them. But the bigger or the more worrying statistic is that by the end of 5 years, the same census is saying that just over 32% have left. And that's significant. And I think when you look then at inner cities, this problem can be even worse, with nearly 50% leaving within their first 5 years. So I think therein has two strands of quite a significant crisis.
Thank you for that, Catherine. So what has the government response been to these challenges?
There are varying things that the government has intervened and undertaken, not all of which I agree with. So going right back to the 2010 white paper of Gove, and he wanted to diversify provision, giving people more options with an ideology linked to school centre training. So if it had his way, essentially teacher education would have moved into school-based. but it hasn't fully. So we've still got a mixed economy now, which has led, I think, to confusion and complexity in the system. The government see national targets as being met because they have a national target for new entrants into secondary and primary teaching. But individually, because of this diversification, individual providers are not meeting their own numbers, and that's down to the fragmentation. So whilst as a nation we have been hitting targets for primary nationally, we haven't for secondary for years. Individual providers are struggling because there are so many different small providers now mixed within more traditional larger providers. So that's difficult, and that's leading to some subject lines, particularly in secondary, closing because of unsustainable numbers. Subjects like DT, for example. The other thing that government has done to try and attract teachers into the profession is the use of bursary. So the government used these to attract particularly hard to recruit to subjects. The irony is that actually some bursaries are higher than teacher starting salaries. So I don't know how that kind of pans out when you actually join the profession and take a pay cut for doing so. But the question lies in how effective are these really in meeting the challenge of attracting more teachers. So you may get more people coming into teacher education, but actually what happens is they're not staying. There's no intention, because there's no commitment with this bursary. There's no commitment to actually going into teaching at the end of it. So if you're coming out of a degree and you're not sure what to do, actually doing a PGCE, for example, in a subject where you get quite a strong bursary is quite attractive for a year. So there's some issues there. And also there's an imbalance between where the bursaries are paid. So as I said, they're paid to those going to teach hard to recruit to subjects with things like maths and science, getting the big money bursaries, and other subjects or phases. So for example, primary doesn't get a bursary. So there's an imbalance there. And I actually personally don't think the bursaries that have been going for many years now get it right. And the third thing they've done is recently introduced a recruitment and retention strategy. Now, this is new and it's far too early to evaluate or to see any impact. But I have to say, I do think this is a positive as an overarching strategy, but it needs to be operationalised. And the way they're doing that is through key elements. So they've introduced what they're calling the early career framework, which allows then NQT support for their NQT year plus their first year after that, so essentially extending the NQT year. Another strand of the recruitment and retention strategy is to revise the ITT core content, so what is being provided as a minimum entitlement, if you like, within teacher education has been reviewed. This was rushed out just, and I say rushed out because it was rushed out ahead of Purdah before the general election in December, and actually is no great shakes at all and highly potentially disappointing. And then there's the review of the Ofsted framework, which has a much bigger focus now on the inclusion of wellbeing and a workload focus. So there's a lot of varying strategies the government has implemented and continued with over the years. They need a lot of unpicking because still the problem persists.
Thank you, Catherine. It could be argued that one of the challenges to recruitment and retention is unmanageable workload. So do you think anyone can expect a perfect work-life balance?
Well, it's really difficult. So you're absolutely right that there is a significant link between attrition and workload, and that's being reported. So the Education Support Network conducts an annual teacher wellbeing survey and sends us out as an index that you can access online. And figures from that are stating things like 72% of education professionals describe themselves as stressed, and that goes up to 84% when you're talking about senior leaders. 33% of our teachers are working an average of 51 hours a week. If you're a leader, 68% of leaders are saying they're doing that. And through nearly three quarters of education professionals considered inability to switch off and relax as being a key contributor to their negative work-life balance. So clearly we're seeing indications that there is a disconnect here, or there is a correlation between attrition and work-life balance, and a disconnect between what goes on in schools and teachers being able to achieve a suitable work-life balance that will enable them to stay. So can anyone expect a perfect work-life balance? We talk about it all the time and people strive for it. And I'm going to be quite contentious now and say, no, I don't think you can. And that's not to say that it isn't an issue and it mustn't be addressed. But I think we've got the whole notion wrong. I think we're chasing the wrong goal, actually. So just to put that into context, perhaps, in their book, How Remarkable Women Lead, Joanna Barsh and Susie Cranston state, in relation to a leadership project that they were involved with, they stated that our women saw work-life balance for what it was, an unattainable goal. Instead, they've adapted to a life of managed disequilibrium, a fluid and dynamic approach. So if I interpret that for you, it essentially in my mind means work-life balance is unattainable. We can't ever have a balanced work and life at all times. But to chase that goal, I believe, leads to increased stress on our part and a sense of failure. So yet again, we haven't managed to achieve a work-life balance this week, next week, over the month, year, whatever. And actually, it can be more stress-inducing for us. But to look at it in a different way, look at what they're referring to as a managed disequilibrium, does acknowledge that there are peaks and troughs in work patterns and pinch points and so forth. So essentially, we live in a disequilibrium. So at times there will be a significant amount of our time spent on our work activity, and other times where we can spend more on our life or home activities. The key to this is the word managed, though, because you can't actually live in a disequilibrium, because if you're overworked, you'll burn out. And if you're constantly just prioritising your home life over work, well, that will end up in no good shakes either. So it is, the key word is the managed element, that you need to manage this and control it. And I actually think it is achievable because of the controlled element. So I think it is a different way of seeing and controlling and being on top of well-being rather than aiming for a balance. Another way, actually, another phrase that I heard recently in a podcast that I was listening to is quite simplistic, but someone said it's not about work-life balance, it's about creating happiness in work and life. So it's just a different spin, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a really good way of looking at it, actually. And what do you think practical steps might be that would have a significant impact on teachers' well-being and careers?
Well, I think there are varying things, actually. And I think we can, some of which we can do ourselves, some of which I think we need the profession as a whole, a movement perhaps within the profession and individual employers to take a grip of. But I think what we need to think about is why we're there. And I, again, listened and I saw Arianna Huffington being interviewed on some, it may be YouTube or something. But she said something really interesting, that why do we put all of our work in relation to hours? So we get paid on an hourly rate, a working week is so many hours. Why are we attaching work to that? Because actually what we're not paying people for the amounts that they work, we pay people for their judgment, their knowledge and their skills. And I thought that was a fascinating point. Of course we do. We're not paying you to just rock up for 37 hours a week. What we're paying you for is your insight, your judgment, your skills, your knowledge, how you work. And I thought maybe that would be a really good starting point for employers to think about, particularly kind of flexible working and different creation of a different mindset about hours at work and being in the office and things like that. So that's something for employers as well, to and everyone to maybe think about a different mindset. Individually, I think for ourselves as professionals, what there are some key things. I think firstly, a support network, a professional support network is really key. And that will include your colleagues and your line managers, but also your friends and families, people that offer and listen to you and can offer advice and support you. Another thing that I think is highly valuable and is becoming more popular, but I would like to see it happen more, is to for professionals to seek out a mentor. So someone experienced who you trust and respect, who's going to really support you through your career. Mentors aren't necessarily for life. So they you may have a variety of mentors throughout your career, but they're certainly people that will call you out, challenge you, but yet at the same time support and help you to unpick your own career and challenges within it. So if you don't have a mentor, my advice is find one, but ask somebody. So if you think, oh, I'd love them to mentor me, ask somebody, because the worst they can say is no. And linked to this is as well engaging coaching. So good coaching supports you in helping you work through your challenges yourself to find your own solutions. And know your supporters. So a supporter is someone who would champion you in your work, and they push you forward for opportunity, publicly applaud you, and so on. And this can be one person. We can have someone that is a mentor and coaches and is a supporter all in one as well. But absolutely think about that as a professional, seeking out someone like this or people like this that can really support you. And of course, consider refraining from aiming for a work-life balance at all times, and think much more about managed disequilibrium, or how you can have well-being in work and life and so on. I think school leaders, though, really need to step back and have a think as well about their actions and how that impacts workload. So can you review the demands and think about the demands you make of staff? Think small things that do add up, like meetings, the amount of marking that leaders expect, the number of lesson observations and that kind of thing. Step back and have a think about, are they all necessary? Look at modern approaches to working and access technology to support workload. Can teachers access teacher development online, for example, rather than having time out of the classroom or having to do stuff in twilight? And for leaders to create a supportive culture, invest in mentoring and coaching, and create a learning culture and supportive culture for your staff rather than just for the children. Because we do that brilliantly as teachers for children, create this environment of support and development. Yet quite often I see in schools that this doesn't filter through with leadership teams onto their staff. And actually we're living in environments of judgment and accountability, which I think is slightly odd when we're so good at doing it with children. Yet actually when it comes to our own staff, we start to fall apart. So I think there's some basic things there for school leaders and what they can do as well. But as it's not just down to leaders. We need, as professional individuals, to do stuff ourselves too.
That's great, Catherine. Yeah, some really useful practical steps there that people could quite easily implement. But what do you think the challenges might be that teachers would face when they implement these steps?
The teachers, I think it's about having support. I think it's time sometimes if you're going to engage in mentoring, and I mean, you can have a mentor that is just there to call upon you to call upon, and they'll offer advice ad hoc, if you like. But I think if you're investing in regular mentoring, you do need to commit the time and give it the space. So I think teachers sometimes find that as another thing to do. Yeah, actually, if they can afford the space and create the space for mentoring, they'll find that that other thing to do actually lessens the pressures on them. So I think time is one key thing, and it is about a reframed mindset. So it is that looking at, I can't achieve a work-life balance. Actually, it's not normal to expect a balance all the time. And we need to move away from that. And we need to maybe stop using the terminology, because it is a term that's used a lot. So I think it is about creating time and making importance and putting yourself first, actually, as a professional. We put, as teachers, we typically put, I think, children first and other people first. And we're really good at that. But actually, it's no point putting them first. If we're not in a good place, if we're struggling, we are not going to be doing the best for the children. So I think sometimes we need to put ourselves first a little bit.
And from my own experience, sometimes it seems like it all becomes a bit competitive in terms of who gets into the classroom first in the morning, who's there the latest, who spends the weekend marking, etc. That sounds very negative, but I think it can become a bit of a spiral. What do you think about that?
Yes, I think competition worries me. I think it is about who's in, who's out, and that goes back to, you know, I was saying about rethinking how we might use technology and how people work, and that Arianna Huffington comment that I mentioned, that we're paying people for their judgment, not the time they're there. You could be the worst teacher in the world and get there at 7 and leave at 7. You know,
yeah.
But there is, it's kind of a factory mindset, you know, quite an industrial mindset about clocking in, clocking out.
Yes.
And we're not in an industrial business. Education isn't an industry like that. And whilst, you know, actually I watched, so this is slightly different. So whilst we see ourselves, and I think we have adopted far too many industrial mechanistic practices in education where we don't need to have them. And I think that has been burdensome. And now part of that is justified, or people will justify it through the accountability regime. But I actually think if we step back, we need to think about how mechanistic and regimented some of our practices are that don't need to be. I also, Jeff Bezos, who's the CEO of Amazon, he's a big anti-work-life balance person as well, but he talks much more about a circle of kind of how your work and your life intersects, and you can't separate the two. To look at work separately to life is peculiar. So and he talks about how he doesn't set an alarm and how he has breakfast with his kids and all of this, and which is great. Now, that isn't possible in education. So I'm not saying it is by any stretch of the imagination. You know, you can't rock into school at 10 and say, oh, I didn't get up, I didn't set my alarm. However, I think we're very quick in education to say, it doesn't work for us, we're different, and sticking with what we do. So we kick it into the long grass immediately, saying, no, that's not working for education. That wouldn't work for education. That wouldn't work for education. So I think we need to pause and say, of course, you can't have staff coming in and, you know, in that kind of fashion that I don't set my alarm, I get up whenever it takes. However, are there elements of this that we can adopt? You know, simple things like teachers having their PPA time at home, moving to online staff development so that they aren't staying for twilight. So the expectation that staff are engaging with and their development is really important. I'm not talking about reducing expectation at all, but could they do it differently? And therefore, instead of having to do these twilights, get those as extra days holiday. These are just simple ideas, but I think it's about thinking outside the box and not always saying, oh no, but it doesn't apply to us, we're different.
No, that's great. Really good, interesting ideas. And in this current state of lockdown, people are having to find very different ways to work. And do you think some of these ways will enable a better work-life balance? I know you don't like the term, but and is this something we could take forward to the future?
So, firstly, I don't think they will create a work-life balance. I'm hoping that they will enable us to create ourselves a much better managed disequilibrium and be much more in control, and therefore have a better well-being, and go back to the point of that quote that I said about the being happy in life and work. So I do, and I really hope, I so hope that when this, we come out the other end of this current situation, that we do take the time to press the pause button and reflect on how practices had to change quite quickly. But what was good out of that? What can we capture to continue with? Because there are some really beneficial things that are happening. And what I fear most is that we will just flip straight back to the way we were without even a second thought and go back to the same working practices that we had. Now, some things won't work, of course they won't, but I do think there are things that are working. People have realised that life can function with online meetings. You don't have to be travelling to school, up and down the motorway to attend a 30-minute meeting. You can do it online. And there are so many benefits in that around time, impact on your workload, impact on your well-being, and then even bigger around financially for schools and sustainability wise. So I think as well, we really need to, I really hope that we stop and press the pause button and look at how we can embed some of the interesting things that have gone on and some of the networking and sharing of resources that I've seen on places like Twitter has been amazing. So why can't that carry on? Why do we only need to share when we're in a crisis? Should we not, as an educational community, be sharing resources and supporting one another just as the norm?
That's great, Catherine. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this podcast. Many thanks to Catherine Carden for her input, and I hope you enjoy this recording.
Thank you.